Hi, fantasy readers. This is Corinne Norton, your fellow book binger, and you are listening to the Finding Fantasy Reads podcast, where you can test out a new fantasy story every single week to find your next favorite author. Today's story has another unusual look at an artisan in a fantasy world. It also explores the relationships between family and the pros and cons of chasing dreams. It's written by P.D. Mack, who spent a career in the U.S. Army before transitioning to education as a university academic dean, and now he writes full-time. If that's not enough, he's also sung backup for Broadway plays, provided voice for radio plays, and acted and directed theater stage productions. In his off time, he and his wife enjoy cycling, kayaking, and traveling. Today's narrator is Peter Franson, host of Christian Geek Central. Stick around at the end, or check out today's show notes to see where you can find more from both the author and the narrator, as well as how to enter our newest wintry giveaway. For now, please enjoy Fathers and Sons, Part 1 by P.D. Mack.
Thorgil was small for his age, even for a dwarf. His parents attributed it to an elven curse. After all, that was the only rational explanation. They had five other strapping sons who were amongst the tallest in the clan, powerful young dwarves probably better suited to be border guards or miners than ale brewers. But Thorgil, the youngest? An elven curse was the only answer. How the curse was invoked was another matter, but his father was sure it occurred at the battle before Thorgil was born. The elves had overrun a defense embankment only to be pushed back. Thorgil's father remembered a retreating elf hurling some sort of curse in Elvish at him as the elves fell back to the forest.
"We should have wiped them out when we had the chance," his father often complained. "Now it's too late. Their black magic has gotten stronger."
Then he'd cast a glance at Thorgil. It's not that he didn't love his youngest son. He loved him as much as any father could whose son was such a disappointment.
"The boy can't wield a hammer," his father groused. "Every dwarf can wield a hammer. It's in our blood."
"Your hammers are too big for him," his mother replied. "Every dwarf starts off with small hammers and grows into the bigger ones."
"But he can't wield the bigger ones. He's still using a boy's hammer."
His father crossed his arms and stared at her.
"How can he be a cooper when he can't even bend the hoops for the barrels enough to hammer in the rivets? So I think to myself, maybe he's a better brewer, but the boy's attention wanders."
Reaching into his apron pocket, he pulled out a small stone carving of a unicorn.
"Here, look at this," he said, handing her the carving.
Holding it up to study it, she marveled at the intricate detail.
"It's beautiful."
"It's got a horn sticking out of its head," he grumpily pointed out. "What sort of horse goes around with a horn stuck out of its head?"
"Look at how lifelike it is," she said, slowly twirling the unicorn in her hand. "It's as though this horse could come alive at any moment."
"Dang it, woman," he snapped. "That's not the point. He's too distracted. He spends his time making things like these instead of learning a trade."
"He's got the talent to be an artist," she countered.
"Don't be a fool, woman. We're brewers and coopers, not artists."
"Maybe he should enter some of his work in the carving contest," she said, ignoring him.
"Carving contest?" he fumed. "We've got no time for that. He needs to learn his trade, just like the rest of the family."
"The carving contest is just 2 weeks away," she said, still admiring the statue. "Why, I'd bet he'd win first place."
"Are you listening to me, woman?" he scowled.
Lowering the carving to gaze at him, she sweetly smiled.
"I always listen to you. You go back to your ale and barrel making, and let me figure out how to get Thorgil entered in the carving contest."
Turning around, she called out,
"Thorgil!"
With a sigh of exasperation, his father rolled his eyes, shook his head, and headed to the workshop behind the house. He knew better than to argue anymore. Her mind was made up, and when her mind was made up, she was harder to move than any stone known to dwarves. In a corner of his father's barrel house, amidst the noise of hammers, saws, and bellows, Thorgal slowly walked around a small work table, studying the chunk of blue alabaster nestled in the middle. He had been saving this piece for a special occasion, but when his mother told him about the carving contest, he knew this was the stone to use. The question was, what to carve? The second question was, did he even have a chance of winning? He would be competing against the very best, dwarves who had decades of experience and talent. Thorgal was barely past his 13th summer. Reactions had been mixed when word leaked out that he was to enter the carving contest. His brothers teased him mercilessly, while his friends gave him encouragement. The grown-ups? Most commiserated with his father, saying it was probably for the best, as Thorgal would never make a good alemaster. However, there were a few who were pleased with the prospect, especially the burgomaster, who was excited that one of his villagers was entered in the contest, even if he was a mere youth. As Thorgal studied the stone, he heard a psst at the window behind him. Turning, he saw Bryce, a curly, brown-haired lad 5 summers younger than he, peering over the ledge.
"Come here,"
Bryce said, curling a hand at him.
"What is it? I'm busy,"
Thorgal said.
"I want to show you something,"
Bryce said, looking furtively side to side.
"What is it?" "You gotta come here."
With a sigh of frustration, Thorgal walked over to see what was so important. Leaning out the window, he looked down as Bryce pulled back a bit of cloth to reveal a small, beautifully carved knife.
"That's an elven blade," Thorgal blurted out.
"Shh,"
Bryce admonished.
"Not so loud."
"Where did you get it?"
"In the forest."
"You found it in the forest?"
Thorgal's eyes widened in surprise.
"Nah, I traded for it,"
Bryce grinned.
"You traded for it? What did you trade for it?
Remember that carving of a bird you gave me?"
"Yes," Thorgal replied, not liking that his creations were viewed as barter.
"I traded that bird for this,"
Bryce triumphantly said. Thorgal gazed down at the blade and knew immediately it was an expensive piece. Bryce had traded well.
"Who would trade you that for the bird?"
Bryce glanced around again, then said,
"An elf."
Thorgal's eyes bolted wide.
"You traded with an elf?"
"Not so loud,"
Bryce scolded him.
"You want to get me in trouble?"
"How'd you get an elf to trade with you?"
"You gotta come out here. It ain't safe to talk like this."
Without casting a second glance at the waiting slab of alabaster, Thorgal hurried out, and soon he and Bryce were well away from prying adult ears as they made their way to the back streets, then down the paths towards the forest that separated them from the elven domains.
"There's a secret place in the Forbidden Zone,"
Bryce explained when they were finally beyond eavesdropping,
"that me and Gunner go. One time, we was there and saw some elf kids, so we ran away as fast as we could. But when we ran, I forgot and left a small hammer I was using to bang away at a stump. So the next day, me and Gunner go back and I can't find the hammer, but there's a couple of elf toys on the stump."
"Elf toys?"
Thorgal said.
"Yeah,"
Bryce replied.
"Stuff like a yo-yo and pinwheels. So me and Gunner figure they was trading us for the hammer. We go back home, and I get one of my ma's small pewter plates, and Gunner, he brings a couple of his toys he don't use no more. So we take him to the secret place and put him on the stump. We wait around a bit to see what happens, but no one comes. We go home, but the next day the stuff's gone, and there's elven stuff in its place, like an elven shirt my size. And how did they know it would fit me?"
"You have an elven shirt?"
Thorgal asked with some envy.
"Yeah,"
Bryce grinned.
"We've been trading ever since. That's how I got this knife. I hope you don't mind I traded your bird for it."
"No,"
Thorgal said with a shake of his head.
"Looks like you got the better deal."
Realizing they were getting close to the forest that edged the Forbidden Zone, he said,
"I better get back."
"You don't want to see our secret place?"
Bryce said, disappointed.
"I can't,"
Thorgal replied, torn between responsibility and curiosity.
"I don't have a lot of time to get my carving done before the contest."
He turned to go and felt a weird feeling of satisfaction filled him. It was the satisfaction of making the right decision. His father always said, "Do what you have to do now, No dwarf succeeds by wishing he had another opportunity.
It won't take long, Bryce urged. We're almost there.
Not today, Thorgal said, feeling like a grown-up.
I got work to do, but I'll give you another of my small carvings and let you trade it for me.
Honest? Bryce said, pleased with the trust.
Honest, he answered.
The following day, Thorgal had done nothing but stare at the alabaster stone on his workbench, studying the blue coloration, the cloud-like patterns, and the seeming transparency of the stone. By late afternoon, his father had come by and fussed at him.
That stone isn't going to cut itself. Get to work. Remember, do what you have to do now.
No dwarf succeeds by wishing he had another opportunity, Thorgal finished the proverb for him.
His father frowned and blinked at him, not sure whether he should be pleased or irritated that his son had been listening all this time.
I know, Papa, Thorgal said. It's just that I want to make sure I do it right. I've watched the stonecutters, and some of them take over 2 days before they begin carving.
Well, you don't have 2 days,
his father answered, but not quite as gruffly.
The contest is less than 2 weeks away.
He ticked his head at the stone.
Think of something and get going. Otherwise, you'll rush, and rushing never gets the job done right.
I know, Papa. I think I know what I'm going to make.
What?
A flower.
It took you an entire day to figure that out?
His father cocked an eyebrow at him, then saw Thorgal's look of defeat.
Never mind. Now that you know what it is, you can get to work.
Several days later, Thorgal was focused on the alabaster stone, carefully tapping the mallet against the chisel as he cut away bits of stone. Pausing to study his progress, he heard Bryce at the window.
You're going deaf, Thorgal, Bryce said. I've been calling at you for the past 10 minutes. Come here, I gotta show you what I got.
With hammer and chisel in hand, Thorgal walked over to lean out the window and look at Bryce's latest trade.
What is it?
He asked when he saw the strange contraption in the youngster's hands. In the shape of a box, it was small enough to fit in both of his hands. Made of thin strips of wood held together by tightly woven string, it had a wooden spring in the center that was attached to a two-sided blade on the top.
It's some sort of toy, he explained. You wind this knob here, he said, turning it on its side to show a recessed handle, and it winds the spring inside tight. Once the spring is tight, you push this lever here on top, and look it.
He released the lever and the box lifted out of his hands, hovering a hand's width above his palms, then slowly descended as the spring wound down.
Ain't that something?
Bryce triumphantly said.
I've never seen anything like it, Thorgal replied, amazed at the toy. Do it again.
Only too happy to comply, Bryce twisted the knob to wind the spring, then released the lever. The box repeated the same demonstration.
I bet if I had a bigger spring, I could make it stay up longer, Bryce said.
I suppose, Thorgal said. What did you trade for it?
I traded that one stone you made of the hog.
Thorgal thought of the amount of time it took to carve the sculpture, then looked at the toy in Bryce's hands, knowing the toy would probably not last the week. Though it was well crafted, it was too delicate a toy to survive the hands of Bryce.
I gotta get back to work, he said, reminding himself at the same time to think twice about giving his carvings away. You still gonna give me a carving to trade for you?
Sure,
he unconvincingly replied.
When you gonna come with me and Gunnar to the secret place?
After the contest, Thorgal answered. I'll come then.
By the end of the week, the petals of the flower were taking shape. Thorgal's father now made it a point to check on his son's progress several times a day, each time offering words of encouragement tempered with realistic expectations.
Remember who you're competing against, and don't be disappointed with the results. These carvers have been at it for years. You have talent, but they have experience.
I know, Papa.
His father then said,
Tell that youngster Bryce to leave you alone. You don't have time to waste with him. And while I'm thinking about it, where is he getting all these things he's bringing here to show you?
Thorgal's palms began to sweat, and his mouth went dry.
I don't know, Papa.
It was almost the truth, for he'd never been to the secret place in the forest. His father narrowed his gaze at him, then sternly spoke.
Some of those things don't look dwarf-made.
I don't know, Papa. I haven't really been paying attention to him. He comes here to show me stuff, but my mind's on my carving. I can't even tell you all the stuff he's shown me.
Mollified, though doubtful, his father scratched his face through his thick beard.
Well, you tell him to leave you alone.
I will, Papa.
The following day, Thorgal warned Bryce that the adults were on to him and that he needed to be more careful about showing all the things he had.
I talked to him,
Bryce said.
Talk to who? The elves, he replied with a confident grin.
Thorgal's jaw dropped.
You actually talked to them?
Yep, they're really nice. There was three of them about your age. They was tall as I've ever seen.
What did they say?
They asked if there was any more of the carvings because they like them the best. Said there weren't a elf known who could carve like that.
Thorgal's pride grew, and he was about to say he would make more when his father came up behind him.
Get along with you, Bryce. Thorgal's got no time to play. He's got work to do. I don't want you hanging around here. Go find some children your own age. Thorgal has to start earning his keep.
Yes, sir,
Bryce said, stung at the inference that he was just a child. Hadn't he talked with elves? What grown-up could say the same thing? The only time the grown-ups had anything to do with elves was by fighting. As Bryce walked away, Thorgal's father said,
You're 13 summers old now. You don't have time to play anymore. You keep working on your carving. Your mother and I talked, and we think we can make some money with your carvings.
Really?
He brightened.
Yes, he smiled in reply. I didn't want to admit it at first, but you've got a gift. Our family has always been brewers and coopers. This will be a first. Who knows, if it's done right, you might be able to make a living doing it.
Honest?
Honest,
his father chuckled.
Now let's see what you have so far.
Thorgal held out the stone for his father, who studied it silently for a bit, then nodded.
You're coming along real good. What more are you going to do?
I've got to work the flower petals smooth and cut away to show veins on the leaves. I need to find a small enough rasp to smooth the petals.
Well, here,
his father said, reaching into the apron pocket and pulling out three small rasps of varying sizes.
I made these for you. Hope they'll help.
Thorgal took the rasps and gazed down at them, hefting each one. They fit perfectly into his hands.
Thanks, Papa, he said, and hugged his father.
Now,
his father admonished, pulling him away, though Thorgal saw the pride in his father's eyes.
Back to work.
Yes, sir.
The day before their departure, Thorgal had risen early and wrapped his sculpture in soft cloth, then in a more secure box for the journey to Angor. His father had yoked an ox to a small wagon used for short hauls of ale. Standing in the doorway, box securely in his arms, Thorgal kissed his mother goodbye and climbed up to sit next to his father. With a crack of the whip, the ox lurched forward, heading towards the great city of Angor. They had spent the night in a small tavern where his father pronounced the ale good, but not as good as theirs, carefully instructing his son in the finer points of why their ale was better. Thorgal did his best to pay attention, but his mind was on the contest. His father noted the disinterest and interpreted it as nerves. The following morning, though Thorgal's stomach was too much in knots to want food, he forced himself to eat as he knew the day would be a long one. It was when they crested a small hill that he sucked in his breath, for in the distance Angor rose like an impenetrable fortress with towering battlements and thick crenellated walls, all of which emerged out of the mountain as though it was part of the ancient peak. A single wide road snaked its way to the main gate, which was wide enough for two wagons to pass. By the time they approached the massive portcullis, they were enmeshed in the throngs headed into the city. The gate was guarded by a single soldier on each side, whose only function appeared to be to keep traffic moving. Once past the gate, the road turned sharply left.
That's to slow down an invading army,
his father explained.
The road twists and turns until you get to the main part of the city, most of which is inside the mountain.
Have you been there a lot?
Thorgal asked.
Before you were born,
he replied,
when I was a soldier fighting elves.
Was there ever a time when we didn't hate elves? He asked.
Not in my lifetime,
his father replied. Looking over to a shopkeeper in front of his produce, he pulled to a halt and called out,
"Ho, friend, where can we find Carver's Walk?"
The shopkeeper was a plump dwarf with a curly beard that went down to the middle of his ample stomach.
"Ah!"
The shopkeeper's eyes brightened.
"You're a carver, then?" "No, my son is." "Your son?"
he replied with a raised eyebrow.
"The tad seems a bit young to be a carver." "He may be young, but he has talent." "No doubt, I'm sure,"
he politely replied, then pointed up the road.
"Keep to the main road until you get past the main barracks." "I know it,"
his father nodded.
"Once past the barracks, take the road to the Guardian Hall. Carver's Walk is on the way." "My thanks, friend."
He flicked the reins and the cart moved forward, blending into the crowd. Thorgal's eyes were wide with wonder as he looked side to side at dwarves and wagons and soldiers all mixed going in all directions. Everyone seemed in a hurry.
"Where is everyone going, Papa?"
His father smiled in understanding.
"Life here is not like at home where we take our time to do things. Here in the city, it seems that everyone needs everything right now."
As they approached the barracks, his father said,
"This is where I lived for a while."
Thorgal looked up at his father. While his father often talked about his time in the army, it was always stories of life living in the barracks. To hear him tell it, life in the army was one of monotonous drills and exercises, followed by drinking with friends.
"Papa,"
Thorgal ventured,
"did you ever have to go to war?"
"Yes,"
he replied, looking straight ahead.
"Did you have to kill elves?"
"Yes."
"Bryce's father says it's an honor to be in the dwarf army. He said that to be in battle was glorious."
"War is only glorious to the living,"
his father quietly stated. Thorgal gazed at the long barracks building that rose in layers like a pyramid. Soldiers stood guard outside the main doors, saluting officers as they entered or departed. Thorgal was disappointed as he imagined the barracks would be teeming with energy and activity. Instead, it was a solid, drab, gray stone edifice with little to recommend it. Just past the barracks, the road split, one way leading straight towards the main part of the city, the other slowly rising, then disappearing into the mountain. His father steered the wagon to the road on the right. No sooner had they passed the gaping gateway into the mountain than they entered a cavernous junction where at least a dozen roads went off in different directions. His father slowed the wagon to ask again for directions of an artisan dwarf, for he wore the apron and collar of the guild.
"Pardon, friend. Might you direct us to the Carver's Walk?"
"You're almost there,"
he smiled and pointed to the far left road.
"Take that road. It's not more than 400 paces farther."
"Many thanks."
"Are you a carver?"
the dwarf asked, his curiosity obvious. He scratched his cheek through his thick beard.
"My son is."
"Ah," he nodded. "Here to look over the pieces in the competition?"
"Looking to enter,"
his father answered.
"The lad's work?"
"Yes."
"Forgive my doubt, but might I see what he has?"
Bristling at the condescension, he turned to his son.
"Show him."
Thorgal reached behind him and lifted the small box to his lap. Opening it, he unwrapped the carving and held it out to the dwarf, pleased at the change in expression. The dwarf accepted the sculpture, scrutinizing it as he turned it over in his hands, then looked up at Thorgal.
"This is your work?"
"Yes, sir."
"You have talent, lad. This is exceptional work."
He handed the carving back.
"But there are masters with decades of experience who are competing. My advice to you is to enter the novice level, where your work will be noticed."
"Thank you,"
he replied. With an affable nod, the dwarf walked off to one of the food vendor stalls that lined the edges of the great hall. It was then that Thorgal noticed the aromas of baked meat pies and sweet desserts causing his stomach to growl.
"We'll get you entered first,"
his father counseled.
"Then we can find something to eat."
The dwarf who sat behind the wide registration desk was a no-nonsense dwarf who said gruffly,
"Step lively now. Are you here to gaze or compete?"
"Compete, sir,"
Thorgal answered.
"How old are you, lad?"
13.
Frowning, he sighed.
"Let's see what you have."
When Thorgal peeled back the layers of cloth surrounding the carving, the dwarf's attitude changed.
This is your work?
He asked with some doubt.
Yes, it is,
Thorgal's father answered for him.
Hmm,
the dwarf mused, studying the carving, then Thorgal, then back to the carving.
Your age should put you in the novice division, but your work far exceeds the level of talent found there. I'm going to put you in the intermediate division.
He pushed a piece of parchment towards Thorgal, then twisted it around.
Fill out your name and the title of your piece.
Thorgal accepted the feathered pen and wrote his name, his father's name, town, and title of the carving, which he simply called Flower. Accepting the registration, the dwarf quickly scanned it and placed it on a stack of other registrations. He then penned a small card with Thorgal's name and the title of the carving. Blowing on it to dry the ink, he handed the card and carving to a young dwarf standing ready by the wall.
Intermediate division,
he announced, then turned his attention to Thorgal.
Good luck, lad. Next.
When does the competition start?
Thorgal's father asked.
Tomorrow morning. Winners will be announced in the afternoon.
Nodding his thanks, his father led the way back to the wagon.
You've got skills better than I imagined,
he said, stepping up into the driver's seat.
Looks like your ma was right.
Can we look at the other carvings?
Thorgal asked.
You sure you want to?
Why not?
Don't want you to get discouraged. They put you in an advanced division, and you haven't had any schooling. There's bound to be a lot of talent there.
I know, he replied. I still want to see what's there.
You don't want to eat first?
Despite his stomach growling, Thorgal was too nervous to think about food.
We can eat after we see what's there.
Reluctantly agreeing, his father stepped back down and they made their way to the judging hall. The doors to the hall were open, and as they stepped in, Thorgal's eyes wandered in fascination over the hundreds of creations ranging from tall statures of horses to small pieces of finely crafted marble.
Where's the intermediate section?
His father asked one of the docents, an elder dwarf with thick gray beard.
The competition hall is divided into three parts,
he explained.
Up front here is the expert division. Behind them is the intermediate, then the novice.
Instead of going to the intermediate section, Thorgal led the way to the front section, stopping at the first sculpture, a female dwarf leaning forward on a small chair, arms on her thighs, head tilted as though staring intently at something. The work was incredibly lifelike, and Thorgal lingered, studying the way the artist shaped the stone. By the time they moved on to the next piece, his father was decidedly bored.
You take your time. I'm going to get something to eat. Meet me at the wagon when you're finished.
Okay, Papa, he replied, staring at a sculpture of a swan, wings spread wide as it landed on water.
While his father strolled off to find something to eat and a fine mug of ale, Thorgal marveled at the exquisite detail and movement of the creations. Instead of being intimidated by the talent, he was invigorated to see what could be accomplished and carved. Studying each piece caused him to envision his own work and how he could improve and become a master sculptor. When he came to the intermediate section, he could see the difference in skill levels in the little things like details of the feathers on a swan's wing. An expert would spend the time distinguishing the downy barbs at the base from the rest of the feather, delicately carving each part. Intermediate carvers, though skilled, spent less time on detail. Wandering up and down the aisles, he closely examined the intermediate pieces, nodding at selected carvings that got his attention. He paused before one exquisitely carved piece of a flower sculpted from alabaster. The detail was excellent, down to the veins on the leaves. It was a minute before he realized the piece he so liked was his own. Packed amongst the crowd sitting on stone benches, Thorgal and his father waited for the three officious-looking dwarves to finish their tabulations. Thorgal recognized the one dwarf from yesterday as the one who looked at his carving. Remembering the dwarf's praise, Thorgal hoped that would add to his chances of winning. Clearing his throat, the older dwarf in the center tapped the result pages on the table, aligning the edges.
We have the results of this year's competition. The entries were many and excellent. We'll begin with the novice class. In third place...
Thorgal's nervous anticipation increased as the third place winner, a middle-aged dwarf, made his way to the front, beaming with pride to receive his trophy and prize money. The same occurred for second and first place.
Now on to the intermediate division, the head dwarf announced. I must point out that the entries for this division were the most we've ever had, and the entries were all of outstanding skill, making our decisions quite difficult.
Thorgal frowned as the dwarf droned on.
Come on, he muttered.
The lead dwarf announced the third place winner, and Thorgal's hopes rose as his name was not called. His hopes rose further when second place was called. He crossed his legs and his fingers, waiting for his name to be called. The lead dwarf cleared his throat and read loudly,
In first place in the intermediate division is Freydis Hammersmith.
Thorgal's heart sank and his shoulders slumped. His father patted his leg, whispering,
The competition was tough. You'll just have to try harder next year.
Thorgal's disappointment was so great that he contemplated asking his father if they could leave now. He looked up to see his father's attention focused on the dwarves up front behind the table. The dwarf they had met yesterday was speaking.
Before we move on to the expert division, there is one more prize to be awarded in the intermediate division. Normally, we award only three prizes, but we all agreed that this young carver's talent was so exceptional that he deserved recognition. This was his first competition, and his talent was so strong that he was placed in the intermediate division instead of the novice division, where all first-time entries are placed. So, the honorable mention in the intermediate division goes to Thorgal Coopersmith.
Hearing his name, Thorgal's sour demeanor immediately sloughed away, and he bounced up to receive his award.
You have skill, lad, the lead dwarf told him.
You need some training to go with that skill. Have your father talk to us after the program.
Yes, sir, Thorgal said, grinning so much that his ears began to ache. The program ended. Thorgal and his father waited for the crowd to disperse. One of the judges noticed them and waved them over.
You are his father?
Aslav Coopersmith,
Thorgal's father replied.
I see where he gets some of his talent,
the dwarf said kindly.
I've seen the craftsmanship of your barrels. Some are works of art in themselves.
You are most kind,
Aslav replied, pleased to know his barrels commanded the attention of those here in the capital.
Is your ale as good?
I'll send you a barrel and you can decide for yourself,
Aslav grinned.
Ha! Well said, my friend. Walk with me as we determine the future of your gifted son. Stay here,
he said to Thorgal.
Or study the sculptures of the experts. See what they have that you might be missing.
His spirit soaring, Thorgal watched them meander away, chatting and friendly. He wondered what it all meant and how he could learn to be a better artist. Would he become an apprentice to a master? The thought excited and worried him, for it meant leaving the security and warmth of his home. It was as he was closely examining the foot of a sculpture of a stag that he heard his father and the master carver approach.
It's been decided, lad, the dwarf said. You'll come here to apprentice under me.
Thorgal's mouth slacked open in joy, then quickly closed when he saw his father's pride edged with sadness.
We'll go home first,
his father explained,
to get your things. Then we'll come back here.
There's no rush,
the master carver said.
Take a week or two if you need.
Thank you,
Aslav replied.
But when we Coopersmiths make a decision, we see it through. It's like they say, any decision, no matter good or bad, is always better than no decision.
Well said, Master Coopersmith. You can rest assured that your young prodigy will have the best tutors and masters available. He will be like my own son.
On the drive home, his father was unusually quiet. Not wanting to intrude, Thorgal kept to his own thoughts. They were halfway home before his father spoke.
I'm very proud of you, Thorgal,
he said, looking straight ahead, the reins slack in his hands.
There's never been a member of our family or clan who has been recognized like you have. It is quite an honor and well-deserved.
Thank you, Papa.
His father paused and licked his lips.
I know I doubted you at first, but when I saw what you could do, I was more surprised than anything else. We've always been coopers, barrel makers, never had an artist in the family.
But Papa,
Thorgal pointed out,
he knew all about your barrels. He said they were works of art themselves.
His father smiled with pride.
That's because we make our barrels like an artist carves a sculpture.
He laughed at the thought, then looked affectionately at his son.
I suppose you being an artist isn't all that odd, now that I think about it.
Flicking the reins, he said,
We best get you home, and let everyone know my son won an award in the nation's stone carving contest.
When their wagon approached the town, few paid attention other than to wave in friendly recognition. The burgomaster, who was weeding the garden in front of his bungalow, looked up as they passed. Seeing their friendly yet nondescript expressions, he assumed the worst and went back to weeding.
It's best this way,
his father whispered, leaning over to him.
When you become famous, they'll treat you differently.
Back home, his father related the success, then warned everyone to keep it to themselves.
Why, Papa? An older brother asked.
Because success breeds jealousy, he replied. Let Thorgal go to Angor and make a reputation for himself. Nothing overcomes jealousy better than quiet success.
The next morning, Thorgal was at his workbench collecting and cleaning his tools when he heard his name whispered at the window. Looking up, he saw Bryce.
How'd you do?
Bryce asked. I did okay, he evasively answered.
You want to go to the trading spot this morning?
Can't, he answered. I have to clean my tools and equipment.
That can wait until later,
Bryce complained.
You gotta come now. I left some stuff yesterday, and I'm hoping to get another elf shirt. If it's too big for me, you can have it.
The thought of an elven shirt caught Thorgal's attention. Casting a quick glance around the shop, he figured he'd be gone for less than an hour, barely enough time for them to notice he was missing. Taking special care not to be seen, the two young dwarves skirted the town and headed to the forest and Bryce's secret trading spot. Once in the forest, Bryce led the way, snaking his way around trees and clumps of bushes, backtracking and sidetracking to ensure they hadn't been followed.
Is it much farther?
Thorgal asked, beginning to get anxious about being away too long.
Nah,
Bryce confidently replied.
We're almost there.
His pace slowed to a creep, and Thorgal could see a break in the forest as the Forbidden Zone opened up in a long strip that separated the elven domain from the dwarves. Trees had been hurriedly cut down, and only the splintered stumps remained. Bryce hunkered down and pointed to a low, flattened stump with several items on it. One looked to be a piece of clothing.
There, he quietly exclaimed, pointing. Looks like they left us some stuff. Come on.
Thorgal hesitated. How do you know it's safe?
Don't be a scared chicken,
Bryce sniffed.
I've been coming here all the time. Ain't seen anybody ever.
While Bryce stood up and nonchalantly strolled to the middle of the barren strip of land and bent down to examine his prize, Thorgal hesitated, then eased out into the open, finally ending up beside Bryce.
Look at this,
Bryce said, his eyes bright as he held up an elven shirt.
It's beautiful,
Thorgal said when he had a sudden feeling that they were being watched.
I think we need to go now. Just a minute,
Bryce said, ignoring him.
What's this?
He held up a wooden carving of a horse, then handed it to Thorgal. Seeing the carving, Thorgal forgot his nervousness and held up the carving, studying it.
It's not bad, he commented.
The artist didn't use the grain very well, and you can see where his tool is not sharp, for there are tiny cuts burrs that can't be sanded smooth. They both jumped when a deep voice called out, And you can do better. Panicked, the two dwarves snapped their heads to see a troop of elves emerge from both sides of the forest. They were armed with swords and bows and arrows. Bryce began wailing in fear, streams of tears pouring down his face. A tall elf approached, towering over them. He wore thin and supple green armor that blended with the forest colors. His long blonde hair was secured behind his head by a simple leather headband.
Do not cry, little one, he said. Unlike dwarves, we do not kill children.
We don't kill children either,
Thorgal stubbornly stated.
You are not old enough to remember, the elf sternly replied. Looking back at the edge of the forest bordering the elven domains, he said, Bring him out.
Two elves physically escorted a young elf who did not look pleased to be there. He was scruffily dressed, his hair a tangled mess and dirt smudges on his face.
He looked to be Thorgal's age. "Do you recognize this dwarf?" the older elf demanded, pointing to Thorgal.
"No,"
he said, giving Thorgal a quick once-over.
"I recognize him."
He ticked his head at the sniffling Bryce. The older elf held out his hand. In it was a delicate carving of a small bird.
"Hey, that's mine," Thorgal blurted.
The older elf frowned and looked at Thorgal. "Are you saying your friend here stole this from you?"
"No, I gave it to him."
"Then it is not yours," he pointed out.
"I didn't mean it like that. I meant I made it. I carved it," Thorgal explained.
The frown deepened, and the elf turned his attention to Thorgal. "You carved this?"
"Yes,"
he defiantly answered, irritated that grown-ups, no matter elf or dwarf, always doubted him.
"He really did," Bryce said, his sniffling slowed. "I watched him do it."
The elf held the carving up, twisting it slowly in his hands. He then gazed directly at Thorgal. "We shall see. Bring them along." Bryce erupted again in tears, while Thorgal's apprehension morphed to anxiety.
"But I'm supposed to go apprentice to a carving master," he exclaimed.
"You should have thought about that when you entered our domain," the elf replied over his shoulder.
"But this is the Forbidden Zone," Thorgal objected. "It doesn't belong to anyone."
"It did once," the elf tartly replied. The trip through the forest was tedious. While Bryce's wailing had diminished to a constant whimper, Thorgal tried to remember the direction of their travel, but soon gave up as he could see no recognizable reason for their sudden turns and shifts. One thing he did notice was the size of the trees increased in both height and thickness. Some trees were so thick that 20 dwarves with their arms outstretched couldn't encircle them. Abruptly, they stopped in the middle of a small clearing surrounded by the grandest trees Thorgal had ever seen. Above them, the branches intertwined so thickly that shafts of sunlight looked like brilliant swords slicing through to the earth. Thorgal watched as an elf pressed what looked like a large coin against a part of a tree, and the outline of a door appeared, widening as the door opened. The older elf led the way inside, and soon Thorgal found himself climbing steps in a circular stairwell, wonderfully carved out of the interior of the tree. By the time they reached the next door, Thorgal's legs burned from the climb. As he passed through the doorway, his eyes widened in wonder, for spread out before him was a town teeming with elves. Paths between trees were suspended wooden bridges that did not sway or move despite the amount of foot traffic. There were carts pulled by oxen, elves on horses, flocks of goats and sheep all moving and flowing in this world about the ground. Bryce took one look and grabbed Thorgal's arm.
"Take them to the Great Hall," the older elf commanded. "Lord Rimuel will decide their fate."
At that command, burlap grain sacks were roughly jammed over their heads and their hands tied behind them. Bryce began wailing again.
"Do all dwarves bellow so much?" an elven voice complained.
Guided by firm hands gripping their arms, Thorgal tried counting steps and turns, but gave up when he realized he had no clue where they were to begin with, and the resonance of the city overlapped despite his best efforts to identify sounds. At one point, the noise of the city faded, followed by being led up a long set of hard stairs. After more twists and turns, they stopped and their covers removed. They found themselves in a room cleverly crafted of intertwined branches, the only light coming through the small gaps in the ceiling. The door closed behind them. Bryce huddled in the corner and shivered with fear, his arms wrapped around his knees. Thorgal knew he should be terrified, especially after all the stories his father had told him. Elves were their hated enemies. Nothing an elf did was ever good. An elf's sole reason for existence was to destroy everything the dwarves held dear. The only good elf was a dead elf. Thorgal could recite the litany of diatribes against the elves. Yet this place was magical. There was nothing in all Rockdale like this. He touched a branch in the wall and jumped back when it moved, tightening against the neighboring branches, filling in gaps. The door opened, and an elf blocked the light.
"You,"
he said, pointing to Thorgal. Come with me. You, little one, he addressed Bryce, will stay here. This caused Bryce to wail until the elf commanded in a loud voice, Silence! I heard dwarves were brave, so act like one. He spun around and led the way. Thorgal followed the elf through the hallways, whose walls and ceilings were intertwined branches worn smooth from centuries of touch. Midway down one hallway, the elf stopped before a thick door and knocked, then opened the door, ushering the young dwarf inside. Thorgal found himself standing before an older elf with long hair that had once been blonde, but was now revealing streaks of gray. He sat behind a wide table. Before him were several small sculptures that Thorgal recognized as his.
You claim these are yours, the elf said, though not unkindly.
Yes, I carved them.
The elf stroked his smooth chin.
You will understand when I say that I have reservations as to your truthfulness.
Why would I lie? Thorgal defiantly replied. Who are you?
An elf guard gave him a not-so-gentle tap on the head.
Watch your tone, young elf. This is Lord Rimuel, the ruler of this part of Elvenholm.
My apologies, sir, Thorgal said, rubbing his head. You said you didn't believe that I carved those. Give me the right tools and stone, and I'll prove it to you.
That is my intent, Rimuel said, leaning forward.
Before he realized what had happened, Thorgal found himself standing before a workbench not unlike the one at home, except the bench was at eye level.
How am I supposed to do anything? I can't even see the top of the bench. Don't you have a smaller bench?
We're elves, not dwarves, came the reply.
A step stool was brought in, and Thorgal ascended so that the table was waist high. On the table were tools and rasps and a piece of white alabaster. Examining the tools, he was surprised at their quality. Unfortunately, they were large and unwieldy.
I need smaller tools, he groused. I'm a dwarf, not an elf.
While they sent off to find appropriate tools, Thorgal studied the stone. It was cut in a truncated pyramid. Tilting his head, an image emerged from the stone, and he knew what he had to carve. Looking back at the older elf, he said,
What happens when I finish this?
It depends on what you craft, Rimuel replied. You and your friends' lives depend on it.
Folding his arms, he stared down at the diminutive dwarf, leaving Thorgal dumbstruck and flustered. When an elf returned with dwarf-sized tools, Thorgal swallowed hard. Then he blinked and tightened his lips, taking a deep breath. If his life depended on this carving, then he would show them just who he was. He would carve them a sculpture they would never forget.
I need to be alone, he ordered. If I am to carve this piece, I don't want to be interrupted or disturbed. No one is to see this until it is finished. Is that agreed?
That is reasonable, Rimuel nodded. But be warned, you only have so much time to complete this. Any longer than necessary and your lives are forfeit. And do not think of trying to escape. You are high above the forest floor, and the entrances are guarded. Besides, he grimly smiled, if you slip, it is a long way to the bottom.
How long do I have?
The elder elf gazed at the stone.
You will have 15 days. At the end of 15 days, your creation will determine your fate.
What about my friend?
Your friend will be well cared for while you work. Standing to full height, he towered over Thorgal like a colossus. It is time you began.
It took 14 days for Thorgal to carve his sculpture, each time refusing to allow anyone to see his progress. He slept and ate in the workshop and quickly covered the artwork any time the door creaked open. Lord Rimuel came by on 2 occasions, each time peering in to see Thorgal hunched over his creation like someone possessed. It was late when Thorgal was finally satisfied. Covering the artwork, he let out a sigh of relief that he had completed the work in time. Leaping down from the stool, he walked to the door and banged on it.
I'm finished, he announced when the door opened.
The tall guard gazed down at him, then up to the table where the carving lay beneath the covering. Giving Thorgal a silent nod, he closed the door. Thorgal heard him say something in Elvish to another elf, followed by silence. Pacing the floor,
He fretted about his fate. He knew he was a good carver, but suppose they didn't like what he had created. Maybe they didn't know real art. They were elves, after all, sworn enemies of dwarves. His father's words came back to him. The only good elf is a dead elf. Thorgal's jaw slacked at the thought that maybe this was a trick. Maybe they kept him captive here to carve this, making him think that he would be freed, but they would kill him in the end. This was all just a game for them, a game to torture him because he was a dwarf. Then he thought of his carving and began berating himself for being so stupid as to think that his creation would make any difference. His mind reeling, he decided to destroy his work. He would not give them the satisfaction of his creation. His foot was on the stool when the door opened and Lord Rimuel walked in. Rimuel glanced briefly at Thorgal, then at the covered artwork on the table. "Let us see what this dwarf has created." His tone dripped disdain and superiority. Stepping briskly to the table, he lifted the covering and startled at the craftsmanship of the piece. Yet he was more surprised at the subject, for Thorgal had carved an intricate stone bridge. Beneath the bridge, flanked on both sides by bushes and trees, water flowed in a calm current. A hare gambolled by the stream. On the other side of the stream, a wolf sat on its haunches, watching in curiosity. Yet the elder's attention was drawn to the two figures on the bridge. One was a dwarf, his hand pointing at some unseen thing in the distance. He seemed to be smiling, extraordinarily pleased about something. Next to him was an elf, bent over so that one arm rested on the bridge railing. With his other arm, he rested a hand on the dwarf's shoulder, his head tilted back as he laughed. Rimuel stared at the work, sucked in his breath, turned and, without a word, walked out, the door closing ominously behind him. Swallowing the lump in his throat, Thorgal stood blinking and bewildered. He had yet to close his mouth when the door opened and two elves entered. "Follow me," the one elf said while the other picked up the carving.
"Be careful with that," Thorgal cautioned. "It's not a toy."
"Relax, little one," the elf said. "No harm will come to your creation."
Thorgal relaxed and then replayed what the elf said. "No harm will come to your creation." He didn't say no harm would come to him. He suppressed his fear as he followed them down the hallways, but his apprehension grew when he realized they were leading him back to the lock-in place. Pausing outside the jail, the elf not holding the carving opened the door and pushed Thorgal in. Bryce leaped up as his friend entered.
"Thorgal!" he exclaimed. "What are they going to do to us?"
"I don't know," he nervously replied as the door shut behind them.
"Are they going to kill us?"
Bryce sobbed and began to cry.
"Stop it," Thorgal said with a worried frown.
"You can't start crying every time you get scared."
"But they're going to kill us," he moaned.
"We don't know that," Thorgal said, though doubting his own words.
Pacing the floor, he accidentally touched a branch which quickly twisted to tighten against other branches in the wall. He looked at Bryce and asked,
"Have you tried escaping?"
"I tried," he sniffled. "Every time I touch a part of the wall, it closes in and gets tighter. The only way out is the door, and it's always guarded."
He sat back in the corner and wrapped his hands around his knees. Thorgal continued pacing until he tired and sat next to Bryce. They were awoken when the door opened and an elf placed a meal tray on the floor. Behind him, daylight spread outside and shafts of light pierced the gaps of the jail. The meal deposited, he closed the door. Thorgal stood, yawned, and stretched, then went over to see what was for breakfast. Steam curled from plates filled with eggs and sausage. There was also a small loaf of warm bread. Sitting down, he hungrily devoured his meal.
"You better eat," Thorgal told Bryce. "As long as they're feeding us, we're okay."
"I'm not hungry," Bryce said, though Thorgal could hear his stomach growl.
Lifting the tray, he carried it over to Bryce, placing it in front of him.
"If we're going to try and escape, we have to be strong. You can't be strong if you don't eat."
He held out the plate to him. Bryce took the plate
and half-heartedly picked at the sausage. Yet once he had a mouthful, his hunger overcame his moroseness and he stuffed his mouth full. His meal finished, Thorgal resumed his pacing. He continued until his restricted journeying was interrupted by the midday meal. This time Bryce needed no urging and gobbled down the meat and potatoes. There were even mugs of cold cider. It was not long after the meal that Bryce sat and leaned against the wall. For the first time, the branches did not tighten, and he found it curious. Twisting to look, he found the gap wide enough to slip a few fingers through. Leaning back, he quickly realized that this part of the wall had the dull flatness of dead branches. Picking up his dinner knife, he jabbed it into the branch.
"This is dead,"
he softly exclaimed, pointing to the chisel marks on the branch.
"We can escape from here."
His spirit soaring, he focused his attention on stabbing, scraping, and cutting away at the branch, but the wood was harder than he realized, and though dead, it would yield little to his efforts. By mid-afternoon, he had barely widened the original gap. He was mid-thrust when the door opened and an elf stepped in. Casting a stern gaze at Bryce, frozen in place, he said,
"That wood is elvish oak. You will be old and gray before you cut through that with a kitchen knife. It takes a special saw with razor teeth to make use of the wood, but that is the least of your concerns." He stepped aside. "Come, little ones. Your fate has been decided."
Debating whether to hold on to the knife in case he needed a weapon, Bryce knew it was useless and flipped the knife to the floor, and then followed Thorgal, who had boldly stepped outside where another elf waited.
"Follow me," the elf commanded, and turned to lead the way. They traveled out the great hall and through the gates, then on the road for some distance as it went into the town, turning onto so many different side roads that Thorgal lost sense of direction. Yet his fascination held as they passed homes and businesses filled with more elves than he would ever see in a lifetime. As they passed, the cacophony of daily life would slip to a silent standstill as elven heads would turn to follow them, their eyes suspicious that two young dwarves were here among the elven clan. Once past, the noise would resume in sibilant whispers that trailed behind them. After more than 2 hours of winding and twisting and Thorgal was sure had been a tortuous circle, they came to a door in a large oak. Two dwarves were waiting for them, two small packs in their hands. Hoisting the packs to their shoulders, they led the way through the door that led to a narrow set of circular stairs that descended from the platform.
"Where are we going?" Thorgal asked.
"You will discover that when we get there," one elf replied. As they began their descent, Thorgal startled when he realized that he didn't have his sculpture.
"What about my carving?" he pleaded.
"It remains here," an elf firmly replied. Pausing to cast one last look back, Thorgal found himself not so gently nudged down the steps. To the two young dwarves, the trip down was as tiring as their trip up, yet soon enough, they found themselves at ground level, standing outside.
"Come," the elf said, leading the way. This time, Thorgal was certain they were traveling in a circle, for he swore that they passed the same tree at least 4 times, yet each time they passed it, the ground looked unfamiliar. It was as they approached the Forbidden Zone that he recognized the splintered stumps of those by his homeland. His heart soaring, his pace quickened.
"Slow down, little one," an elf chuckled. "We are almost there, but we must negotiate first."
"Negotiate? What does that mean?"
Bryce asked.
"You will see."
They edged up to the end of the forest, and Thorgal felt firm hands grasp him at the shoulders.
"Do not do anything stupid, little one," a voice warned.
Across the gap, Thorgal saw several dwarves, among them his father. His relief flooded within, and he chafed under the steel grip of the elf. He gave a quick wave, hoping his father would see.
"Are you prepared to trade?"
a deep dwarven voice called out.
"Yes," an elf called back.
"Let us see them."
Thorgal felt himself rising as the elf effortlessly lifted him in the air, stepping slightly forward to display his prisoner. He then stepped back and called out,
"Let us see him."
A young elf calmly stepped out into the zone. He stood erect, with bright eyes that spoke humor. He then stepped back. "Are you ready to exchange?" an elf said.
"Yes."
There was but a moment's hesitation as the elf held captive by the dwarves bent down and retrieved a small chest. He gave the dwarves a cheery wave, then nonchalantly strode out into the zone. While the elf made his way across the forbidden zone, Thorgal and Bryce were handed a pack each. The elf gave Thorgal a sealed letter. "Give this to your king. Do not let anyone else give it to him. It must be you," he said, then returned to the protection of the forest. Thorgal and Bryce hurried to cross the forbidden zone, passing by the grinning elf as he languidly made his way to the safety of the elven forest. Once across, Thorgal's father swept him up into his arms, tears spilling forth.
"I feared you were dead."
"I'm sorry, Papa," Thorgal replied, full of remorse.
"It's all right now,"
his father said, wiping his tears away with the heels of his palms.
"You're home safe. That's what matters."
Thorgal hugged him, then noticed the many dwarves hiding in the bushes close by. Frowning, he turned to gaze across the forbidden zone to see countless elves emerging from hiding spots, then disappear into the forest.
"I've got a message for the king," Thorgal said, holding up the envelope.
The dwarf commander reached for the envelope, but Thorgal clutched it to his chest.
"They told me I had to do it."
Nodding acceptance, the commander led them away from the forbidden zone. Thorgal and his father stood in the doorway of the great throne room. Perched on the marble throne, gilded in gold and silver, the king looked over towards the doorway and motioned them forward.
"Are you Aslaf Coopersmith?"
he said to Thorgal's father.
"Yes, sire,"
Aslaf answered, placing his hands on Thorgal's shoulders.
"And this is my son, Thorgal."
Thorgal felt the strength of his father's hands and the pride in his voice. Thorgal gazed up at the monarch. He was a stout dwarf with strong arms and a russet-colored beard that went to the middle of his stomach. His long hair was thick and fell to his shoulders. His eyes had the sparkle of one constantly amused with life. Noticing the young dwarf staring at his head, the king said,
"You're probably wondering why I'm not wearing a crown."
He leaned forward and cocked an eyebrow.
"Truth is, the blasted thing's uncomfortable. I only wear it when I need to impress someone. I don't need to impress you, do I?"
"No, sir,"
Thorgal blinked in reply. Aslaf leaned down and whispered in his son's ear.
"Sire, address him as sire. He's the king."
"No, sire,"
Thorgal said, feeling his father's reassuring squeeze on his shoulder. The king flashed a smile, then eyed Thorgal curiously.
"I hear you've been among the elves."
"Yes, sire,"
Thorgal politely answered.
"I've been told that you have a message for me."
"Yes, sire."
"May I see it?"
he smiled.
"Of course, sire."
Thorgal started forward when his father held him back. A steward came and took the envelope, then climbed the steps and handed the envelope to the king. Breaking the seal, he pulled out the note. "To His Majesty Vestar Silvercoat, King of the Dwarves. This young dwarf is of unequaled talent and possesses the heart of innocence. It would be a pity to the future of both dwarves and elves should he fall in some foolish battle devised by those whose hatred surpasses their wisdom. Protect him and keep him safe. Perhaps one day his kind will prevail." The king reread the note, then folded it and placed it back in the envelope. Standing, he handed the envelope to his steward.
"Keep this safe for me. I'll want to study this later."
Stepping down from the dais, he walked to stand in front of Thorgal and his father.
"Well, Coopersmith," he said to Aslaf, though looking at Thorgal, "you've an interesting son." "I know,"
Aslaf smiled. Shifting his glance from one to the other, the king finally rested his gaze upon Thorgal.
"Walk with me,"
he said, his voice kind and fatherly.
"Tell me all you know about elves."
I hope you enjoyed listening to Fathers and Sons, Part 1. by P.D. Mack. Narrated by Peter Franson of Christian Geek Central. If you want to read more by P.D. Mack, you can find his books on Amazon, and I'll have a direct link in the show notes. This particular story is from the Chronicles of Murstone anthology, and inside it you can find part two of Fathers and Sons, and other short stories from different authors as well. If you enjoyed listening to Peter narrate the story, you might also enjoy listening to his audio dramas at spiritblade.com or his podcast, Christian Geek Central, where he discusses movies, video games, and all things enjoyed by self-proclaimed geeks from a Christian worldview. This month, several authors who've been featured on Finding Fantasy Reads have teamed up with me to give away 4 wintry fantasy audiobooks and a 3-month Audible subscription. And yes, even if you're in the Southern Hemisphere and your summer is approaching, you can still enter because it's open internationally. The 4 audiobooks include Chronicles of Narnia, the whole series, even the non-wintry parts, The Winter King by Christine Cohen, Wolf Soldier by James R. Hannibal, and The Snow Queen Saga by K.M. Shea. So if you want a chance to win, go to findingfantasyreads.com/giveaway to enter. I'll have a direct link for that in the show notes as well. Thank you all for listening, and happy reading.